VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The U.S. is weighing a response to Iran for their strike on Saudi oil's industry. The AP's Ed Donahue.
Iran's foreign minister says a U.S. or Saudi Arabian attack on Iran would set off an all-out war. In Abu Dhabi, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says diplomacy is the way to work this out.
While the foreign minister of Iran is threatening all-out war to fight to the last American, we're here to build out a coalition aimed at achieving peace.
South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham says Iran can't get away with this.
Restoring deterrence is going to require a military response that will create some amount of pain so they'll be less likely to do this again. And to me, it's not an all-out war scenario unless Iran wants it to be.
Iran's foreign minister says they will have a lot of casualties, but they won't blink to defend their country. Ed Donahue, Washington.
A powerful suicide truck bomb devastated a hospital in southern Afghanistan, killing as many as 20 people, wounding more than 90 others. AP correspondent Zaria Shackley.
The Taliban, who claimed responsibility for the bombing, have carried out nearly daily attacks since peace talks with the U.S. collapsed earlier this month. The massive explosion destroyed part of the hospital in Qalat, the capital of southern Zabul province, and left a fleet of ambulances broken and battered. Hours earlier, a drone attack in eastern Afghanistan's Nangarhar province, blamed on U.S. forces, killed and wounded as many as 30 people, most of them civilians. There is no immediate response to requests for comment from the U.S. military in Afghanistan. I'm Zaria Shakili.
Three former executives of Tokyo Electric Power Company have been acquitted on criminal charges related to the 2011 meltdown of three reactors at the Fukushima nuclear plant in northeastern Japan. The executives, the only people facing prosecution for the disaster, were accused of negligence for failing to act on warnings. The plant was threatened by a tsunami that followed a 9.0 magnitude earthquake. This is VOA News. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says he cannot say for sure how many times he's worn brown or blackface. AP correspondent Julie Walker.
At first, Trudeau did not answer repeated questions about how many times he wore blackface or brownface. As of Thursday afternoon, three photos surfaced.
I am wary of being definitive about this because the recent pictures that came out, I had not remembered.
The most recent photo of Trudeau in brownface was taken at a 2001 Arabian Nights party when he was 29 years old. With his bid for re-election a month away, the prime minister apologized and begged Canadians to forgive him. I'm Julie Walker.
Israeli political challenger Benny Gantz said Thursday that he, not Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, should lead a new unity government. Gantz's centrist blue and white party won the most seats in parliament in this week's election. There was no clear winner in Tuesday's election, but Gantz's party won 33 seats to 31 for Netanyahu's right-wing Likud party. Both Netanyahu and Gantz called for a unity government, but Gantz said he should lead the next government since his party won more seats than Likud. U.S. lawmakers will move next week to begin passing legislation combating human rights abuses in Hong Kong. It's an action intended to send long-term support to democracy activists there. Some of the key activists in Hong Kong's pro-democracy movement are on Capitol Hill this week. Denise Ho, one of them.
I want to thank the Congress for giving the support because this is a message to these Hong Kong people that we are not isolated in this fight. We are in the forefront of this very global fight for universal values.
After months of protest, activists in Hong Kong succeeded in forcing the withdrawal of an extradition bill widely seen as an incursion by the mainland Chinese government. If legislation passes in Washington, the bill would allow President Trump to use an act to sanction Hong Kong and Chinese authorities for human rights abuses while ensuring protesters are not denied entry visas to the United States and that Hong Kong is complying with U.S. sanctions and laws. Washington State's Attorney General is suing U.S. President Donald Trump to stop him from diverting $89 million from a military project to help find the border or fund the border wall with Mexico. State Attorney General Bob Ferguson filed his lawsuit Thursday in a federal court in his state. He asserts that Trump's emergency declaration and plans to divert military funds for the border wall are unconstitutional because Congress never authorized that money. Find more at VOAnews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, September 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Cameroon lawyers say they will end their week-long strike today, Friday.
I can tell you, most Cameroonians are very relieved, and they can now count on lawyers as a force to reckon with.
Evariste Umoffa is the leading Cameroonian human rights lawyer. South Sudan's president hosts a prayer service for peace in the country. Former Ivory Coast President Gbagbo's party is looking forward to his return to be their candidate in the 2020 election. Zimbabwe hospitals turned away patients as doctors' strike continues. Meanwhile, the doctor who was allegedly abducted last week resurfaced late Thursday.
I remember being in a basement of some sort, being electrocuted at some point. That's what I vividly remember. I just don't know.
That's Dr. Peter Magumbiye. And the 12th Commonwealth Women's Affairs meeting is underway in Kenya's capital, Nairobi. Those stories plus Samse O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The one-week strike action organized by the Cameroon Bar Association is expected to end today, Friday. The lawyers say the strike was necessary because authorities have made it difficult for them to effectively carry out their duties. Evariste Umoffa, a leading Cameroonian human rights lawyer, says the strike has had an overwhelming support from both civil society and human rights organizations.
I can tell you, most Cameroonians are very relieved, and they can now count on lawyers as a force to reckon with. Most of them, litigants whose matters have been adjourned, have not asked to grind with lawyers. They are happy with the action that lawyers have taken because it is for their protection.
But do you think human rights groups in the country, including human rights lawyers, are right in supporting this strike, since some argue that it stands not to change anything at all?
When the lawyers met and resolved to strike, civil society, human rights associations, NGOs, wrote and set the share into to what the lawyers were doing. If a government is bad government, the civil society, the lawyers should not be hopeless. And so they thought they could strike so that the public knows what they are going through, because the reasons for which they were striking were enumerated and handed to the powers that be. Can imagine people appearing in court naked? Lawyers who are supposed to be human rights defenders are caught up, flogged and locked up at any time by gendarmes and the police officers now in the northwest and southwest, including soldiers who are supposed to be in the barracks.
But some argue that it appears most of you lawyers who are on strike are defenders of the separatists, and that you are in cahoot with people who want to divide the country, create tension, you know, undermine the territorial integrity of Cameroon. So you are part to blame in this ongoing saga. How do you respond to that?
I understand your worry, and you see, you risk falling prey to their worries, which to me are lame. It is during the trial of those people that most of the violations of human rights were registered. Why is it that when lawyers defend people suspected of having stolen, they are not called accomplices of thieves? This is not the first case we are doing. Why did they not liken us, or that we have participated in theft when we defend those accused for stealing? Their argument is lame. And as I say, it is during the trial of those who were brought from the northwest and southwest region that this country has registered the grievous violations of human rights. It is in the military tribunal that people appeared naked. Or those arrested in the northwest and southwest were brought to court naked in the court of first instance, Sekuno. So lawyers are human rights defenders.
Evariste Umoffa is a leading Cameroonian human rights lawyer. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Yaoundé. The Zimbabwean doctor, whose disappearance last Saturday sparked a wave of doctor strikes across the country, reappeared alive late Thursday. However, and as Kip Dube of VOA's Zimbabwe service reports, Dr. Peter Magumbiye's recollection of his disappearance is vague.
Speaking on VOA Zimbabwe Services Live Talk program Thursday, a disoriented-sounding Dr. Peter Magumbiye, the acting president of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association, confirmed he was the one on the other end of the phone.
I honestly don't know how to truly identify myself, but Dr. Peter Magumbiye was from Malawi Hospital.
The doctor, who had been spearheading calls for an increase of doctors' salaries when he disappeared, said he could not remember what exactly happened to him or how he ended up where he was, an area called Nyabira, about 21 miles from Harare.
That's the part I'm really so vague about. I think I need time to recall.
Struggling to speak, Magumbiye said he didn't have any obvious signs of physical injury, but only generalized pain. He said his last recollection before being taken by unnamed people were memories of being electrocuted.
I remember him being in a basement of some sort, being electrocuted at some point. That's what I vividly remember. I just don't know. I really remember anything.
Missing since Saturday, Magumbiye said a lot of what happened during that time, including if he had anything to eat or if he was blindfolded, was too vague for him to articulate.
I barely remember anything. I think I'm having a retrograde amnesia. I just don't know.
Zimbabwe's government and police have denied involvement in Magumbiye's disappearance, but said they were doing all they could to find the doctor. The government also indicated the Third Force could be involved in the disappearance to taint its image. Responding to the police allegation and also Twitter posts alluding to the same accusations, Magumbiye said he had no answer.
I need time to think about it. I don't know.
Zimbabwe doctors, some of who were already on strike since early September, demanding pay increments, intensified their strike following Magumbiye's disappearance and vowed not to return to work until he was found. At the time of the interview, Magumbiye said he was waiting for the police and his colleagues to pick him up. One of his colleagues told VOA Zimbabwe Service that he was picked up by the police later, who took him to Central Police Station in Harare. Lawyers representing the doctor said police denied them permission to have access to their client. Police spokesperson Assistant Commissioner Paul Nyati refused to comment, saying he will issue a statement. Reporting for VOA Zimbabwe Service in Washington, I am Kip Stube.
Government hospitals in Zimbabwe have started turning away patients as a strike by doctors and nurses drags on. Negotiations have been held up by the disappearance of the strike leader, a young doctor whom fellow health workers believe was abducted by security forces. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Doctors and nurses leave Zimbabwe's biggest hospital, heading to Parliament to hand over a petition regarding the disappearance of Peter Gabriel Magumbiye, acting president of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association. For much of Thursday, the entrance to the hospital was turned into a place to protest and to address journalists. No patients were being treated at the facility. 53-year-old Susan Tembo, a cancer patient, was one of the patients watching, hoping the strike and the protests would soon come to an end. Tembo says, "I was looking forward to being treated today, but I do not know when this missing Dr. Peter will be found so that they can resume working and they attend to me. I am in pain. The abduction of Peter and the doctor's strike is really making me feel the pain more. I'm now struggling to walk," she says. September 3rd is when Magumbiye called for the industrial action. His colleagues say that is what led to security forces abduct their leader. Nurses joined the doctor's strike this week following the disappearance of Magumbiye. Tawanda Zakada from the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association says health workers feel for the patients, but they can't call off the strike.
"We do not draw any pleasure from it. It actually pains us because those patients might be one of us here, might be our relative. But it's so unfortunate that the employer has put us in a corner, and it really, really hurts us."
Health Minister Obadiah Moyo says the government played no role in the disappearance of the outspoken Magombe. He also says army doctors and nurses are being deployed to hospitals while the doctors and nurses remain on strike. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, September 20th. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. South Sudan President Salva Kiir has called on his country's armed forces to stop unnecessary shootings, which he says are too common in South Sudan. Mr. Kiir made the remarks at a prayer service held Thursday at the presidential palace. As Winnie Cirino reports from Juba, one church leader says in addition to prayers, political leaders must do everything in their power to restore peace in the country.
While welcoming participants of the prayer meeting at the Presidential Palace, locally known as Jowan, Mr. Kiir said he deliberately left the walls of the palace unrepaired so that the holes caused by gunfire during the July 2016 fighting between government troops and rebel leader Riek Machar's bodyguards remain visible. Kiir said the holes are a symbol of the untreated wounds of the South Sudanese people. About 1,000 people, including government officials, judges, civil society activists and religious leaders participated in the prayer service. Speaking in Arabic, Kiir said the communal prayer was for all South Sudanese. The president also said he is determined to fully implement the revitalized peace agreement and form a unity government by the November deadline.
I want to frankly tell you that in November, it's a must that the government shall be formed. If the SPLM-IO does not want the formation of the government, the other parties that signed the peace agreement have to go ahead with the SPLM and form the government. I hope my colleague here, Henry Odoa, will take my message to Dr. Riek Machar that we want all of us here in Juba. Even if he comes in October, we don't have a problem.
President Kiir used the event to call on the country's armed forces to stop unnecessary shootings and carrying out armed robberies on civilians. Paulino Lokudu-Loro, Archbishop of the Catholic Archdiocese of Juba, welcomes the prayer service at the Presidential Palace, but says the country's political leaders have held many prayers before, and what the country needs is lasting peace.
We have been praying a lot in this country, all our churches, all of us. We have been praying for peace, the peace of South Sudan. We even reached our religious leaders in the world, in the Vatican, and the greatest of our faith, the religious leaders of the world, prayed for us, the feet of every South Sudanese.
Archbishop Loro says he's tired of hearing foreigners say South Sudanese know what is happening in their country is bad, but do nothing about it. Severia Chan, who took part in the reconciliation prayer, says frequent prayers can help change the situation in South Sudan. The government organized a national day of prayer and fasting for peace under the theme Repentance and Forgiveness. Last April, President Kiir and Riek Machar traveled to the Vatican at the invitation of Pope Francis to pray for peace in South Sudan and to commit to working together peacefully for the good of the country. For VOA News, I am Winnie Cirino in Juba.
Women living in Commonwealth member states have agreed to prioritize gender equality in their respective countries. Patricia Scotland, Secretary General of the Commonwealth, said that 13 Commonwealth members have so far achieved the global target of 30% of parliament women in parliament, with Rwanda leading the world. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
Speaking during the 12th Commonwealth Women Affairs Meeting opening ceremony in Nairobi, Commonwealth Secretary General Patricia Scotland said that the Commonwealth average for members of parliament who are women stands at 23%, still short of that of the global target of 30%.
13 Commonwealth members have so far achieved the goal target for 30% of parliamentary membership to be women, with, of course, as we know, Rwanda leading the world. The Commonwealth average for members of Parliament who are women stands at 23%, still short of that global target of 30%.
The 53 Commonwealth member states have the responsibility to prioritize agendas such as women leadership, women's economic empowerment, ending violence against women and girls, and gender and climate change. Sophie Helen, a member of the British royal family representing the Queen, has urged Commonwealth member states to strive in ensuring women are involved in decision-making processes.
Together, we need to have an increased focus on ending gender inequality and discrimination, and an increased focus on building environments that enable women's political participation and economic empowerment.
Kenya has failed for the fourth time to pass into law the two-third gender rule that would see women occupy the two-third of the political seats in parliament. Reading President Uhuru Kenyatta's speech, Kenya Sports Minister Ambassador Amina Mohammed assured the Commonwealth member states of Kenya's efforts to achieve gender equality.
We should therefore make concerted efforts to promote women's engagement in every aspect of our development.
Africa is still struggling to achieve at least 20% of the gender equality, as most of the political seats are male-dominated. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
An official of former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo's political party says the party is looking forward to Mr. Gbagbo's return to Ivory Coast to be its candidate in the 2020 presidential election. Mr. Gbagbo and Charles Blay Goudé were acquitted earlier this year by the International Criminal Court, the ICC, for alleged crimes against humanity. But ICC Chief Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda said this week that she would ask the judges to reverse the acquittal and declare a mistrial. Jean-Gervais Djeide, the vice president for finance of Mr. Gbagbo's Ivorian Popular Front Party, says the party is waiting on the chief prosecutor to tell the world on what basis she says the judges made mistakes in their decision.
We are not that surprised, because we knew that it was possible for her to act that way. Now, we are waiting for her to let us know on what basis she said that the judges made mistakes in their decision. Apart from that, there's no special reaction. Of course, some people are disappointed, but we have had enough time to consider the situation and say that there's no reason to be disappointed. We have more hope than disappointment.
The former president was supposed to come back, and you were looking forward to the former president coming back to Cote d'Ivoire.
That's true. And we still are looking forward to his coming back to Cote d'Ivoire. We know that he will come back to Cote d'Ivoire. We have no doubt at all about that. He will come back.
I was reading West, I think it's the lawyer that said that Fatou Bensouda has no evidence against Laurent Gbagbo and that she's politically maneuvering to delay Gbagbo's return to Cote d'Ivoire. Do people feel
of
that
course.
Way there too?
Yeah, that is clear that today the ICCP is being used for political reasons. And that is regrettable, because this maneuver of Mrs. Fatou Bensouda is nonsense. It is useless. We know that she knows that there's no reason why she should hope to have any victory in the end. After 2 years of trial, after 82 persons certified that Mr. Gbagbo had done this or that, and this is a total failure. So now she's trying to delay his coming back to Cote d'Ivoire, and they are trying to make sure that he will not be able to be candidate for the coming presidential election. But once again, this is a waste of time, because the people of Cote d'Ivoire know who they want to be president. And when the moment comes, they will let it know.
Cote d'Ivoire has elections next year, 2020, the former President Gbagbo's party. Are you going to take part in these elections?
Well, we will take part in this election, and Mr. Gbagbo is going to be our candidate. There's no doubt about that. So those who are trying to maneuver to put him aside are wasting their time. You will see how things will turn out.
You said that former President Gbagbo will be your candidate?
Yes. As far as we are concerned, unless he himself says that, no, I'm not interested. But we, as the president of our party, we have no reason to choose somebody else unless he himself decides otherwise.
Jean-Gervais Djeide is the vice president for finance of former President Laurent Gbagbo's Ivorian Popular Front Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Abidjan. Five minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Egypt, where the Egyptian Football Association has appointed former Al Ahly player and coach Hassam El Badri as Egypt's national team manager. The 59-year-old will succeed Mexican coach Javier Aguirre, who was sacked last July following the Pharaohs' shock elimination from the 2019 African Cup of Nations round of 16 held at home. El Badri is the first Egyptian coach in Egypt's hot seat in 4 years, following Argentine tactician Hector Cooper, who reigned from 2015 to 2018, and Aguirre, who was in charge from 2018 to 2019. Elsewhere in Madagascar, Frenchman Nicolas Dupuis has signed a new 4-year deal as coach of Madagascar, but still continue his dual role with French lower league club AS Feluri 91. The 51-year-old Dupuis led Madagascar to their first ever African Cup of Nations finals in Egypt this year, where they stunned the continent with their run all the way to the quarterfinals. Staying with football news, Moroccan club Wydad Casablanca has launched a new appeal with the Court of Arbitration for Sport over the decision to declare Esperance the winners of their CAF Champions League final last season. The latest move by Wydad is challenging the decision by the Confederation of African Football Commission last month to award Tunisian side Esperance the title. You will recall that Wydad Casablanca players stormed off an hour into the return leg in Tunis on May 31st after a VAR malfunction meant a disallowed equalizer could not be reviewed. CAF had called for the second leg to be replayed at a neutral venue, but that decision was later overruled by the Court of Arbitration for Sport. Senegal remained the top-ranked African team on the continent, with African champions Algeria still fourth in the continental rankings and 18 places behind in the latest FIFA pool of men's national teams released for the month of September. The new monthly rankings released by World Football Governing Body on Thursday has Senegal in 20th place, Tunisia in the 29th, Nigeria in the 34th, and Algeria in the 38th spot, with Morocco just one place behind the current winners of the African Cup of Nations tournament in Egypt. In athletics news, Jacqueline Wambui, who won the 800 meters at the Kenyan trials, and Linda Kahiga, who was in the mixed relay team, have withdrawn from the World Championships after failing to take mandatory testosterone level tests. Athletics Kenya vice president in charge of competitions, Paul Mutui, said Wambui and Kahiga had declined the mandatory test and withdrew from the Global Showpiece event in Doha. Wambui's withdrawal left 2013 World Champion Eunice Som as Kenya's only entrant in the women's 800 meters event. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A large array of international players, including corporate giants in the United States and China, has profited from South Sudan's long civil war, according to a new report by a Washington, D.C.-based watchdog group. The investigative group, The Century, which reports on links between corruption and mass atrocities in Africa, charged in its report released in London on Thursday that several businesses owners and corporate entities engaged in widespread government-sanctioned corruption. That's it for this Friday, September 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beck, for reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with sports editor Samson Omale, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa your weekend destination.